So good morning, everybody, and welcome to the March 2024 Farm Direct Grower Call. This monthly conversation is intended to help you stay on top of global fertilizer prices and buy in bulk at the most opportune times. I'm your host, Jessica Alderson, and today we actually have some new voices that I'm excited to introduce you to. For our grain side, we've got Daniel Oberberg, who is the Director of Customer Risk for ADM, and he'll speak a little bit to grain markets and outlooks going forward. With our global fertilizer outlook, we have Chris Lawson from CRU Fertilizer Weekly. He is the head of fertilizer, and he's going to give us a little bit of insight to what's going on in the global fertilizer space. Along with that, we're going to have our internal ADM team, Noah Bishop and Brian Flaska, speak to the U.S. fertilizer markets and recommendations going forward. Let's go ahead and have Daniel come off mute, and we'll go ahead and get started with a grain update. Daniel, take it away.
Just mentioned, my name is Daniel Oberberg. I'm the Director of Customer Risk for ADM, located out of our North American headquarters in Decatur. Been with ADM for 18 years now, various trading and risk management roles. I want to talk to the markets, and I've given, quite a few of these over the last month and a half. In prepping for this one this morning, after what we've seen on prices with a little bit of rally here over the past 3 weeks, you've always got to question your biases on where we've been and where I think we could go. So the next 15, 20 minutes, I want to outline, kind of how we've set the table going into 24, the dynamics that are shaping our markets today, and then what to look out for as we move through the early part of the growing season for the U.S. Through the U.S. weather. So really right now, as I think about the grain market, I think that we really have a lot of uncertainty, probably more so now than what I can remember in my 18-year career. And if you look at underlying volatility in the market, it really suggests as such too. If you look at the money December corn volatility, still trading in the mid-20s, albeit with a much lower price point and markets that have really settled down into some sort of a range here, whether it's the war between Ukraine and Russia, the election cycle we're about to be in the midst of, weather, right, is the new normal, the abnormal, and increased South American production, the machine that keeps churning. This transition we've had to the higher stocks to use ratio globally, and the question marks over Chinese demand, the uncertainty underpinning our markets here, certainly is noteworthy. Certainly, there's plenty of headline risk, but really, as we moved into 2024, the uncertainty that was really dictating price action was uncertainty over demand. And we'll go into a little bit on Chinese demand, why there's so much of a question mark over what that demand is or isn't. So, we flipped the calendar to 2024, and we saw gap lowers in beans, and corn continued the downward trajectory lower. Again, it wasn't without headline risk, but the overarching theme, though, was one over demand uncertainty, production in South America that was stabilizing and maybe even swinging back higher. Now it feels like maybe we're seeing swinging production a little bit lower again in South America. But with the broader macro landscape and higher interest rate cycles and the question mark over when demand continues to grow, the managed money or the fund community elected to get short. And get record short. So we exited out of February. The question was, are the funds going to cover? In recent history, there hasn't been a growing season where they haven't covered back out of positions. And what is the catalyst for them to do so? It appears the catalyst has been purely the calendar. And I think there's a little bit of uncertainty over Brazilian corn production for the Safrinha crop or the winter crop that they'll harvest June, July timeframe. But overall, I think the positions have just grown a touch stale, and we've discounted a lot of the fundamental news in the market. So we have seen them cover a little bit, taking us on, call it 6 to 8% rallies on corn and beans. And now we're really looking for this next catalyst to take us higher. And we'll get into kind of price expectations at the end here. So we've seen a little bit of covering, but it's been pretty orderly, met with some pretty decent farmer selling. Both in the U.S. and South America alike. So when we think about uncertainty around the geopolitical risk, to me, as I look at these headlines, certainly the spike highs we saw beginning of 2022 were warranted. But as we start to peel back the layers of the onion, possibly The narrative isn't quite matching with reality. As you look at total Russian-Ukraine wheat exports, they're at record highs. So any downdraft we've seen out of Ukraine has more than picked up by Russia, you know, and that's really been the wet blanket over the wheat market, you know, for much of the last 6 months. You know, we saw Russia FOB prices, you know, dip below $200 a metric ton FOB. They've since rebounded a little bit, but they're, you know, back to the lowest price points we've seen since 2020. So it's just been, again, this overarching uncertainty over what is reality, but we're figuring out a way to match global supply with global demand. And our carryouts for all stuff, right? Not just wheat. You know, I realize the wheat balance sheets have tightened up, but if you look at corn, you look at beans, you know, things are starting to become a little bit looser. Supply chains have gotten easier. You know, as a result, it's given the end user more patience. Working capital, cost of working capital is a real phenomenon. You know, if they have the insurance that supply is going to be there, they can wait, right, and not have to, you know, pay the carry. So it was just kind of the perfect storm to take us to these price points that really nobody expected to get to this early. I don't think we're surprised we got to the price points. I think we thought that would probably be a mid-Q4 phenomenon and not a, you know, late Q1 dynamic that we were dealing with. So election cycle, you know, certainly, you know, U.S. is going to be front and center on the election cycle for 2024, but we're not the only nation under elections. 2024 will be the biggest election year in human history. Basically, half the world's population is going to be under some sort of major regional or national election. But it's uncertainty, right? Change is uncertain. What does this mean for policy in the U.S.? What does this mean for relations between U.S. and China, if we, you know, start putting our heads into a Trump 2.0 administration? You know, I think we've really got to start thinking about, you know, what could this mean for price if tensions do escalate and we, you know, see this large production machine out of South America and, you know, other available supply for China to come by relative to the U.S. Speaking of South American production, you know, over the last, call it 10 to 12 years, we've taken bean production, nearly doubled it from a baseline of 2012, 2013, and corn production is up by 60%. This is a dynamic that is not going to change. My counterpart in Brazil believes that we'll continue to see increase in land use or acreage in South America next year again, even at these lower price points. He believes if we stay down here, it's probably going to pause at that point. But they continue to increase their efficiencies in production. So these new benchmarks we've reached on South American production, the biggest attention I want to draw to this is, you know, not for you all to remember the absolute numbers, but more to understand that, like, this isn't going away. This is here to stay. And it's going to continue to compete with the U.S. for export business as we grow these larger crops. You know, this has transitioned us into a more comfortable stocks-to-use ratio globally. If we look at corn now, we're back to 12.5% global stocks-to-use ratio. We saw that revision a little bit lower on the WASD earlier this month. But we're still back to levels that we haven't seen since, you know, really the end of 2019 into 2020. You know, certainly we have to grow the U.S. crop. Weather is certainly going to be a dynamic. But if we, you know, rewind our minds back to 2019, 2020, before we had this demand-led rally, corn was a 325 to 425 commodity. I'm not saying we've got to go there today. I believe the function of the market today is to make sure that we keep demand. And I think we're doing that through price today. But then if we have another large production cycle, again, we've got to start to put our head into the next function of the market is going to be ration supply to make sure we buy demand and increase demand. Demand is good. Demand is static, though, versus a 21-22 benchmark. Similar story for beans. We're back to levels we haven't seen from a global stocks-to-use ratio since really 2019. You know, again, if we go back in time, you know, you were more of a $9 to $11 commodity. I think the uncertainty underpinning our markets, you know, whether it's domestic demand growth or over renewable green diesel, uncertainty over what is going to be the acreage mix. You know, I think we're going to continue to keep a little bit of a higher floor in the market for the time being. But assuming another normal production cycle out of the U.S., the risk is back to the downside as we look at these global stocks to use ratio that are recovering versus the low we saw in 21 and 22. You know, with South American production, they've had record large exports. It appears we've reached into a larger or another level of their export capabilities. So we look at total pan, beans, wheat, soybean meal exports. Their 2022 was their previous record. They did 145 million metric tons of total exports, but 2023, they did 183 million metric tons. 8 of the 12 calendar months were record export months out of Brazil. For 2024, we expect them to be somewhere in the 170 to 175 million metric tons. So they'll be below what we saw in 23's record. But again, we're not reverting back to that, you know, 135 to 145 million metric tons. They're going to continue to grow large crops. They're going to continue to figure a way to export those large crops. A lot of this production increase has been the call from the increase in Chinese demand. Total Chinese import demand has increased. It's basically doubled since 2010. But as I look at a Chinese soybean import demand chart, we're really plateauing here. We reached 100 million metric tons in 2020-2021 marketing year. We expect that to grow, but at a much smaller pace. I would say we are anticipating, you know, once we get out of 23-24, we'll start to then relax what is Chinese demand and even maybe flatline a little bit here for the next couple of years. And that's primarily brought on by their demographic issue they have. It's predicted now that basically after this year, their population is set to begin to decline. It's a demographic issue. Their birth rate's at all-time lows, and it's not an issue that's going to be quickly corrected. So if you start to think about, okay, total population was a 6% driver of total demand growth over the past decade. And now to say we're going to see less mouths to feed. There's a lot of questions over what is Chinese demand growth. They're still going to grow. It's just not going to be at the 8 to 10% rate we've seen them at the past decade. So that was another one of the minor drivers. Their increase in their middle class is had a larger demand for protein consumption, whether it's swine, poultry, beef, fish, or eggs or dairy. Just their total demand for protein increased. It's still set to increase, but it's going to be a minor driver here forward with what's happening with their population, as well as with concerns over what is their total demand growth of their economy year in and year out. Certainly with higher use, they've had to have higher ending stocks. So they've built the reserve. They've nearly doubled their reserve since 2010. You know, but if we're going to flatline demand or take demand up at a much slower pace, that reserve increase isn't going to have to be as rampant either. But the largest driver has been the commercialization of their livestock herd. So the amount of soybean meal they're using per livestock unit has been a 61% driver of demand growth. But now if we start to think about, okay, well, we've commercialized the herd, we're seeing population set to decrease, concerns over how rampant growth will be, you know, it just doesn't point to a very rosy picture as it relates to, you know, this rampant demand growth we saw for import beans from China over the past decade. So that gives me pause in the market. You know, we've taken prices higher. The global producer has responded with large production. Mother Nature, by far and large, has graced us with, you know, some pretty favorable growing conditions, you know, not without volatility with the unknowns under weather. But I think the risk now, as we look into the 24-25 balance sheet, is one that we're going to, you know, continue to grow carryouts. And then, you know, what is prices function in that as we do grow carryouts? I do believe for right now, I think we're going to continue to be supported over the uncertainties. You know, my initial price targets as I started to give these discussions about 6 weeks ago is I thought we could get to $4.75 on these corn and around $12 on move beans. So we're there. So this really makes me question, okay, what is my bias today? I don't know that we need to have a rally today to take these corn to $5. I believe if we take these corn to $5 and no beans north of $12, I think we're going to get a large mix of corn and bean acres from the U.S. farmer. And I do believe, too, it's not going to send a message to the South American producer to not grow acreage at a large clip. Again, as I start to look, you know, that's more of a Q4 phenomenon but we're just not sending the price signal to stagnate supply. To me, I think we probably can pause for a second. Certainly, we need to pay attention to U.S. weather. I do think if we do extend these rallies, I think we could take December corn to 490, 495. I think we could take nearby May corn upwards of 465. But I just don't. We've really got to see another catalyst to take us north of those levels today. Could it be U.S. weather? Certainly, it could be. You're starting to hear rumblings of a transition away from El Nino back to La Nina. As early as July, August now. So certainly that will have implications on U.S. weather. Beans, again, I thought we could get to $11.85 to $12. If we do extend these rallies, I think the next area of resistance will be around $12.20. If we look at November beans, we do have a gap to fill around $12.30 to $12.40. So those would be some upside price targets. I don't see a reason why we need to take beans back to have a 13 in front of it, though. I think an extension up to that 1230, 1240 area are some really good opportunities to, advance both old crop bushels that are sitting in the bins and 24 and 25 crop. I do believe this game has changed versus what we saw the prior 3 years. And the function of the market today is to make sure we keep demand number one. And then if we have favorable growing conditions again, look to see if and when we need to ration supply, but I think that's a 25 story based upon production for the U.S. and South America. So, Jess, that's what I have.
All right, perfect. I mean, we were really hoping you were going to have a crystal ball and tell us exactly what we needed to do and how to get the best bang for our buck, but we'll take it. If you guys have questions, Daniel is going to stay on the line here. So if you're thinking about grain questions, whatnot, definitely make sure you unmute yourself at the end. Chris, you want to go ahead and give us a little bit of an insight to global fertilizer markets and what's going on in that world, because we've got a lot of different things that are happening.
So as Jeff kind of introduced me, I lead the fertilizer team at CRU. We're a British-based firm, but I'm based in New York. We're looking at lots of different commodity markets, fertilizers, steel, base metals, and aluminum. But yeah, fertilizers is obviously what we're here to focus on today. I think that the word that best describes the fertilizer market over the past 6 to 12 months is divergent. People often ask me, what are fertilizer prices doing? And it's pretty hard to kind of generalize in whether fertilizer prices are up or down at the moment, because the dynamics between nitrogen and phosphate and potash have all been very, very divergent. So we'll focus on nitrogen first of all, because that is the key market. It is the most liquid market. It is the fertilizer that you guys are putting down on your crop the most, and that has been much more seasonally volatile. We've seen a correction in those nitrogen prices over the last couple of years. Obviously, in 2022, we saw them really bounce up on the disruption from the kind of Russia-Ukraine war, which was pretty quickly ironed out, but there was more disruption from changes in the kind of European production costs due to, fortunately, high gas prices there, and lots of different shutdowns within that region. And that was also kind of perfectly paired with some short-term supply disruptions in the U.S. following very different storms. So those nitrogen prices have very much corrected to kind of around about a mid-cycle average now. And as a result of that, we're seeing kind of prices fluctuate based on seasonal demand. So we have seen prices really rear up over the past couple of months when it comes to urea. We've seen urea, NOLA kind of moving up to, we think we can get up to the 400 levels by April. I think we're around the 390 levels at the moment. And international trends are typically kind of following that, but we are expecting those prices to, as kind of some of this northern hemisphere seasonal demand starts to slow down, we are expecting a fairly severe correction in those urea prices, UAN prices, and also ammonia prices, and that is due to pretty comfortable supply picture across the world. We do see lots of this European production that was disrupted. It has been kind of has been switched back on again as gas prices there have come back down and been supporting kind of more profitable production again. We're seeing a kind of likely return to China within the export market. China have been pulling in and out of the export market for fertilizers over the past couple of years, and they kind of tighten their restrictions when the government wants the producers to focus on filling the domestic market. we think that kind of come May, China will return to exporting both urea and phosphate, and that will help to loosen up the global market. And then we're just seeing a decent amount of production coming out of the Middle East and new production areas such as some of the Central Asian countries and also West Africa. So there's plenty of nitrogen supply out there, and that is particularly on the urea front, and that is helping to correct prices lower, bring them down to kind of more mid-cycle averages. And again, what's really important in fertilizer markets is to watch these seasonal demand fluctuations. And again, with that supply, with that seasonal demand starting to slow down kind of post-April, we will start to see some declines then. And we're looking at, just to give you a bit of a benchmark to go on here, we're looking at New Orleans barges reaching around an average of 400 in April, but coming down to around the 330, 340 level by July, and probably with more of a downward bite there as well. So that's the story on the nitrogen front. Phosphate, again, to kind of highlight the divergence here, phosphate prices have held up at a very high level. Again, still well above kind of what we would consider a mid-cycle average, well above where we were a couple of years ago in phosphate pricing. We had DAP, MAP barges trading below $300 a short ton at New Orleans kind of at the end of 2019. Right now, we're well above 600. Now, that 300 level that was traded at the end of 2019, that was ridiculously low. That wasn't sustainable for the industry, but 600 is more than a profitable level for the industry right now. So the reason for that, the manifold, if we think about the supply and demand dynamic across the world, there is overall improving demand, again, following the kind of demand shocks and price shocks of 2022. We're starting to see buyers step back into the market and need to replenish their phosphate inventory. But given the kind of lingering higher prices, that demand isn't as insatiable as what we perhaps had anticipated 6 or 12 months ago. Has been, again, like I mentioned before, with urea kind of pulled out of the market, and China is a much more important phosphate exporter than it is a urea exporter. They're exporting around 4 million tons of urea a year and around 7 million tons of phosphate. So they have a much larger share of that overall phosphate market. Same kind of story there as what I talked about before. The government is instructing that the producers focus on the domestic market during that busy season, and then they will kind of lower the barriers to export when it is less busy domestically. So we're starting to see signs that those barriers are being lowered now, and that we will see a decent amount of volume be available coming out of China over the kind of middle part of this calendar year. We've also seen some kind of supply discipline coming out of Morocco, another key phosphate producer, which has kind of helped to keep the market tight and helped to keep prices relatively elevated. All of this is somewhat exacerbated in the US, as I'm sure you're all frustrated by, with some of the duties that are in place. And that's the kind of ever-evolving situation. Again, duties on Russian products have been raised over the past few months. That had kind of pulled back from the market a lot anyway over the last couple of years. The proposed duty revisions for Morocco are still kind of in play, but we haven't seen the Moroccans step back into the market yet until they get kind of full confirmation of what the actual duties will be. And there is some risk there that they don't step back in at all if they're not happy, even with a much, much lower duty rate. And you've got kind of that restricted import supply coming into the US, but you've also got barriers around domestic production as well, which is again keeping the market very, very tight, keeping inventories relatively low, and helping to keep those phosphate prices relatively inflated. Again, we think that the market should correct itself. We should see phosphate recoupled with nitrogen and potash prices toward the kind of second half of this calendar year. But again, there's probably more of an upside risk there that doesn't necessarily happen. So we don't think phosphate prices are much room to move higher. It's more when that correction happens and the extent of that correction, which is really what we're focusing on at the moment. And again, we do, within our current forecast, think that correction will take place, but there is a risk that that correction isn't in the kind of level that it should be to correct for the rest of the market. On potash quickly, we've seen prices come down, plenty of supply in place there, plenty of supply coming out of Russia, much more than what most people had anticipated. Also Belarus, which had its kind of export artery severed when sanctions were placed on that country a couple of years ago. They're managing to get way more product out than what we'd anticipated, so that's helping to keep supply relatively strong, also more supply coming out of Canada as well, based on some of the production decisions that were made there a couple of years ago when prices were very, very high. Starting to see some of those Canadian producers like Mosaic pull back on some of those plans and starting to temporarily idle some capacity to bring some balance back into the market. Yeah, that is kind of where we're at on potash pricing right now. And again, to give you a bit of a benchmark for New Orleans potash prices, we're currently at around the kind of 315 to 320 level. We think that that's probably going to remain relatively steady over the next month or so. So you can get some reasonably priced potash available. And again, we see very little upside in that market at the moment. I guess to summarize, still high inflated phosphate prices, but that should correct. Nitrogen prices, they have corrected already and will fluctuate based on kind of seasonal demand, but there's a decent amount of supply out there that will stop things going to the moon anytime soon. Potash prices, pretty deflated, pretty low, and again, not too much upside there as well, but probably close to the floor now. So that's about 10 minutes. Sorry, I've gone a little bit over time there, Jeff, but hopefully that has been useful for everyone on the call.
No, I think that's perfect, Chris. It's good to have both a global and a U.S. perspective because sometimes we get blinders on and forget that the entire world trades fertilizer. It's not just the U.S. in our demand windows. It's always great color. Noah and Brian, I don't know if you guys are on or how you want to tackle going forward, but we definitely have some logistics constraints moving into the spring here. So if you guys want to jump off mute and tackle the U.S. market, that would be wonderful to kind of wrap us up here.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. My name is Noah Bishop. I am the urea product line manager here at ADM. My responsibilities include managing procurement risk and trading for urea for ADM for both the U.S. and Canadian regions. On our last call, which was February 7th, prices of prompt urea barges in NOLA were $360 USD a straight ton, and we were trading at a discount in the U.S. to other global destination markets at the time that were active, like Brazil and Turkey and Australia. Our view that the U.S. would not attract spot cargo imports during this time while trading at a discount was correct, and we've seen a decrease in the number of expected imports into the U.S. Gulf during the months of February and March that have led to further tightening in the U.S. and Canadian supply and demand disposition. For imports that have been coming to the U.S. during this time, vessel delays caused by diversions around the Suez Canal and then some environmental delays like fog and rain in NOLA, they've caused supply pipelines of vessels coming inbound to the U.S. to slip beyond original expectations. And then this has been further tightened by production issues at various locations scattered across the U.S. and Canada, due both to mechanical and environmental reasons that have really contributed to a tight supply situation on urea across the region. We recommended on our February 7th call that our customers should cover their spring needs. Since that time, prompt urea in the Gulf has risen by 40 USD a straight ton. We continue to hold the view that there is little potential downside for prompt urea tons in this market due to tightness and the prospects of a relatively early spring. While adverse weather over the coming 10 days, you know, we see some precipitation and cooling effect in the Midwest and the upper Midwest, this may lead to some slightly softer barge values in the barge market. It's generally our view that interior prices will continue to become detached from NOLA due to an array of logistical challenges that bottleneck supply in the interior. And this has partially been caused by a really strongly inverted market. And I'll explain what I mean by that. The NOLA market has been strongly inverted over the last month as buyers have been opting for just-in-time purchases and delaying forward buying. This lack of forward buying enhances the risk profile for traders and distributors in that deferred market, which tends to lead to an underpositioning of physical tons in that deferred time frame, which then in turn leads to further backwardation and enhances spot price levels. The current market is backwardated by about 50 USD a straight ton from, say, a March barge to an April barge today due to both lackluster deferred demand as well as an improving vessel lineup in that April time frame compared to what we're seeing in March. As we look out further to June, for those that use top dress urea, we continue to hold the same view as a month ago, that there may be some opportunities to procure urea for your farms at discounted values to prompt levels today. In fact, our current prices available to our customers today already demonstrate discounted values in the deferred. It'd be my recommendation that you talk with your ADM sales rep about this time frame to secure supply, because if we continue to see this lack of forward buying and just prompt demand, we could see this inverse roll forward that would cause upward pressure on these softer prices in the deferred time frame as well. While the international market appears to be soft May forward, like Chris alluded to, we don't see discounted global prices meaningfully impacting the U.S. market until late April at the earliest, and perhaps more likely May in the barge market, which won't translate to softening in the interior values until June. Just to sort of add on to that, it typically takes about a month from a barge leaving NOLA to be available, say, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, for transit time, and perhaps even longer to some of our interior locations, depending on train cycle time. So given that, our recommendation for those that need urea before June is to secure urea needs today. And for those that need urea June or later for top dress application, I would really recommend that you have a conversation with either your ADM salesperson or with another trusted supplier about supply availability and price, as I think there are some advantageous pricing opportunities available for that time frame today. I'll briefly touch on UAN, although the situation really isn't much different. We've seen really lackluster imports on UAN over the last several months, and the production situation in terms of reduced production run rates on UAN across the U.S. and Canada have been much the same as urea, where production has been decreased. The supply situation is probably even slightly tighter on UAN. A lack of liquidity or prompt buying has really caused prices to be somewhat stagnant, although we have seen increases over the last couple weeks. Our view is very much the same on UAN, that price decreases are quite unlikely until perhaps that June timeframe forward for terminal tons, for perhaps the end of the top dress season. But generally, our view today is that we will continue to see upward pressure on UAN values. And the recommendation is that you should go out and get that secured today, not only to lock in what could be an advantageous price looking back 20 days from now, but also just to secure supply, given that that market is really tight. On the phosphate front, the situation is not all that different from urea or UAN either. On February 7th, we recommended to customers to procure MAP and DAP for spring, as we saw, you know, a firm and firming market looking forward. Spring pipelines are built for phosphate supplies into the U.S. and Canada today, to perhaps no origins can now make it to the U.S. In time for spring if that vessel hasn't already left port and is destined for our market. So light imports from November to January really led to low beginning stocks for spring application. And if you remember back to last year, we had really low carryout inventory as well. So the combination of this it has really caused the S&D on phosphates to be very tight as well. And much like urea, the industry is counting on just-in-time delivery to meet commitments, which is causing a backwardated price market. Many cargoes for both MAP and DAP have delayed arrivals due to aforementioned logistics issues, bringing vessels to the U.S. and Canada over the last couple months. And these delays have intensified consequences due to this prospect of early spring demand, which we've seen across both the Oklahoma market and the Midwest over the last couple weeks, albeit that has slowed slightly due to some adverse weather this week. As we look out further for price expectations on MAP and DAP in a post-spring environment, I agree with Chris that we do tend to expect some degree of softening in the U.S. market. But right now, the degree to which prices will backwardate for summer fill buyers will largely depend on buying habits and volumes by both India and Brazil, as well as Chinese export policy, not only in terms of the timing in which the Chinese export, but also the volume in which they allow export licenses to be cleared. We'll continue to keep our customers updated on these developments internationally, but right now, the North American market is very insulated from these price decreases in the international market for spring. And a tight S&D balance on both MAP and DAP will lead to little reprieve in way of lower prices as we move into spring over the coming weeks, hence our general buy recommendation across both these products at this time. So I'll leave it there. I'll be around at the end of the call should anybody have any questions. I'll let Brian Flaska take it on a couple other products as well.
Thanks to our speakers, Daniel, Chris, and Noah, for giving nice overviews and recaps. I won't spend too much time duplicating what's already been said, but there's a couple comments that I think are worth sharing, specifically on the potash front. Again, as Chris alluded to, the overall supply remains healthy, but I think the key takeaway for the people on this call to understand is that you will start to see that disconnect between your local markets and what's happening in NOLA. You know, the early start coupled with some less than ideal execution rates from the Class 1 railroads has kind of put the system in a little bit behind the eight ball on available supply in your backyards. Typically, in my experience, when you have a spring that starts out like this, it can be very challenging to get caught back up as work streams on the Class 1 railroads typically don't get reduced during the spring run. So from our side, our recommendation is, even though there is very little upside in NOLA, I do expect the typical in-season local swings to take place in the local markets. So I think one of the other key messages here is make sure you're working with your supply partners and understanding where that resupply is going to be. Make sure if you're leaning on an entity that only has one modal of transportation, be it rail, river, or truck, just make sure you understand what their plan B is, because it's my bias that we will not be surprised to see some local interruptions in supply as we get going on the potash and as we see demand start to surge and kick in. So coming out of it, as Chris alluded to, expect to see some stability and some reductions coming out of the heavy spring run. Sulfur, pretty cut and dry, everyone. You know, it feels like the last four or five calls, we've been pretty adamant on the price direction for sulfur, specifically as a byproduct of the curtailed domestic production driven by the turnarounds. And so even though those manufacturing plants are starting to come out of their turnarounds, we're starting to see better domestic utilization rates coming off production, I don't think it's going to be enough to catch the system back up in time. And it feels like with this early spring, as the market's starting to wake up, you've started to see people step in, try to own sulfur, only to realize that there's just not a lot of good options available. And so with that, we've seen basically a $50 rally, higher in some markets too, to be honest with you, but by and large, widespread, a $50 rally in sulfur across much of the system. And so again, you know, as my aforementioned comment on some of the utilization from the Class 1 railroads, we could see some challenges and some spot outages as we get going. But again, this firmness is really tied to the front end, you know, as both Noah and Chris alluded to, with some backwardation in the nitrogen space coming out of spring. It would be my expectation that you would see sulfur fall in line and come out of spring with some backwardation and some downside to it. So just keep that in mind as you're monitoring your buying patterns and not getting too far over your skis, knowing that, hey, you probably have a healthy reset coming out of it. Outside of the NPK as fertilized products, the other thing that's weighing heavily on our minds continues to be the logistics. As many of you know, one of the biggest strengths that ADM brings to the space is our control of said logistics and having touch points with both the vessels, the barges, the stevedoring, the rail, the trucks, all those components. And so I feel like we've got a pretty good sight line on where we're seeing some of the challenges. A couple comments to pass along. Vessels, we continue to see loading times slow down. Some of the rains have been causing some delays with unloading of the vessels. We're seeing boats getting rerouted to alternative berthing sites, due to limited space, limited crane work on some of those as a byproduct of the inbound lineups. As we start to see some delays on the boats, it's really putting the system behind the eight ball and has a compounding effect as many distributors, players in this space are awaiting said vessels. And when you see a day or two slippage on the vessel, again, that rolls into the unit train lineups that get rolled out to many of the interior systems that feed our needs, can materially alter what products are on said train. So in addition to having delays on the unit trains that could materially impact the S&Ds in various regions, what entities like ADM and some of our industry peers are banking on from a mix of products to recharge the system if we see boats delay rather than delaying execution of unit trains, what's actually more likely to take place is that the mix of products on said unit trains is likely to be altered. And so, again, that can cause some disruptions to resupply plans that may not be conducive to what the needs of your local farms are. Pivoting to barges, yes, the barges, first barges are flowing into St. Paul. The entire Mississippi, I believe, opened up here on the 15th, so good start there. But it's going to take some time to fill in. You know, there's a lot of, I want to clarify the conception of when the river gets open, it does take time for these barges to fill in. You know, usually in a normal spring, air quotes, we have a couple weeks to charge the system up and get ready for a normal pre-plant application run. However, as many of you look out your backyards and see the lack of snow, that means we're going to have an early start on the pre-plant run. I'm a little bit concerned of the timing that it's going to take a couple weeks for much of the system to fill out, build up ample supply, and really tackle, you know, the first wave. Make no mistake, there's ample supply coming, but the timing is such that you may feel a little uncertainty or slight interruption in supply widespread in the early going. So I know we covered a lot here on the call with all the speakers, but I think there's a couple central themes that people should be taking away. We're starting to get into a spring market where we will see disconnect from NOLA, probably see stabilization and often some firmness across the whole suite of fertilizer products, only to have some reset coming out of it. Be mindful of your logistics plan and understanding what plan B and what C looks like, and then understand that we're likely to see some slippage working our way into the summer season. So with that, I want to make sure we reserve some time here to cover off any questions. So I'll pause and turn it back over to our moderator, Jess. If you want to open up the floor for questions, we'll go from there.
You bet. Thank you so much. I guess with that, are there some questions that are out there? If there aren't any right offhand, I had a customer that reached out to me, and I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. Whoever wants to take it, whether it's Chris, whether it's Noah, whether it's Brian, if I'm covered for spring and I have all my fertilizer needs locked in and I'm thinking about fall and spring of next year, what are some recommendations that you would make since ADM is able to go out and help growers cover their needs for, you know, 12 months out? What are some recommendations that you're looking at, or do you have anything out that far?
Yeah, I can take a swing at that. I think the theme across all these products, and even going back to Daniel's grain update, is that we're probably entering a different price regime as far as commodities go as we move into past this spring and into the back half of 2024 and 2025. I don't have, when I think about the different products that we trade from a fertilizer standpoint, I don't have any product that I'm particularly concerned today is going to be dramatically more higher priced based on cyclical or fundamental reasons 6 months from now than it is today. I mean, there's always risk for geopolitical challenges, and if that's a concern to you, then absolutely take a look at our deferred pricing and have a conversation with your sales rep. But generally speaking, I would be remiss to tell you that you need to go and forward buy fall fertilizer today, because the general expectation is across all these products, we're going to see some form of price reset going into summer fill. And the risk is really to the downside through into fall. So I can't honestly make a recommendation that you should do that unless you you're able to hedge it with a grain sale or something. But my general bet is that we're going to see more downside through summer fill. And I don't think that, honestly, the prices we have in the deferred listed today as ADM fertilizer, probably you'll look back in the summer and those will likely seem high compared to the spot market during that time. So the option is there. We provide it to our customers, but more reasonably, the recommendation is to not buy fall fertilizer at this time, as there'll be better opportunities in the deferred.
Yeah, and just to provide that kind of third party perspective on that, would kind of agree with that. That generally in the same trajectory of our forecast within the market. Again, there's a little more risk around the phosphate supply, but generally we do see those prices coming lower. Urea, UAN, they're going to fluctuate within a reasonably wide range, but yeah, there's a way for them to go down over the next few months. I think there'll be perhaps some opportunity in that kind of 3 to 4 month time frame to start perhaps looking at kind of procuring some product around then. And potash, you could probably hold off on buying a little bit of upside factor in there. But again, we don't necessarily think that that is going to be anything too drastic.
Just one thing that I'll add on top of what both Chris and Noah covered off on. We do have pricing forward 12 months out of the year, and so I would agree with them. There's really no rush to be owning any of those forward programs. But as you are thinking about it and start to get into those summer months or even the back end of spring, and if you're looking at selling some forward grain, that is one of the unique offerings that we do have within our portfolio, is that forward pricing program and offering values 12 months out of the year. So even though our bias is not to own it, if you feel that's in your best interest, whether you're selling grain or just want to have some cost certainty, that is an offering that we do cover off if it fits your needs. The second piece I would touch on, in this type of market, this is a really great opportunity to explore one of the other offerings that we work through with our on-farm bin programs, knowing that we're going to fall into this period of having backwardation. That may be something for you to consider on your farm operation, is if you don't have a bin program, is now the right time to take a look at it. And I would encourage you to reach out to your local ADM rep to understand what that program looks like.
I think that's a great call out, Brian. We've got a couple people over the last 5-6 years that have invested in storage, and this is a year that definitely paid off when we've had some struggles logistically to get product on rail, up the river, and on trucks. So opening it up to the floor, hopefully some folks have had a chance to think about some questions. To unmute yourself, dial *6.
And good morning. This is Ben from Illinois, Central Illinois. I was hoping I could just maybe catch the opinion of somebody that knows more than I on the status of the UAN production facility in Weaver, Iowa, and its purchase, or, you know, if DOJ approvals had happened, or just where we're at on that whole setup, and of course, whatever you think the market implications might be.
I can have a crack at that one, Noah, and maybe you can add some color, given you're probably dealing with that a bit more directly. But just from what we see, then, the process is ongoing. It's still relatively early stage. I guess that was all announced in December, so we haven't heard anything around a kind of government approval. I think the general expectation within CIU and also within the industry is that it will go through. There will be obviously some issues raised around competition, and again, this was a plant that was built and kind of some things be good on the back of increasing competition, so kind of working a little bit against that. But ultimately, when you do the analysis around kind of market concentration, it should be able to kind of jump through all the hoops that it needs to. Again, the implications of it will you know, somewhat consolidate the market, and that will, you know, have some upside to prices, I guess. But again, there is still a decent amount of, over the long run, there's still going to be a decent amount of UAN that is able to flow into the US and create a bit of competition on that front. There's no sign of the Russian UAN kind of stopping anytime soon, so that should help to keep a cap on the thing somewhat. But yeah, that's our current take on that one. No, I'm not sure if you had any of that.
Yeah, I mean, I won't add anything in terms of the status of the acquisition. I think Chris has hit that on the head. There's really no official update, and I'm not willing to speculate. But from a production standpoint, I will note that when I talked about a myriad of production facilities that have had issues in terms of both due to technical reasons and environmental on producing UAN across the U.S. has led to this tightness that we're seeing. The facility you mentioned would be included in that list, and so that region we see today is particularly tight. So just thought I'd add that note on top to wholly answer your question.
Thanks, guys. That was a good answer. Yeah. Thanks for the question, Vince.
Yeah, this is Joe Farmer, Western South Dakota. I was hoping that perhaps some of the speakers could talk to what they view as a good method to balance interest rate and locking in fertilizer early and balancing, you know, protecting your interest rate expense each year and the potential for increased fertilizer price. Let's say in this spring, I can just say personally that was the reason I didn't book anything, even though I believed wholeheartedly earlier your recommendation to do that. I wasn't really confident that the price would go up enough to offset interest rate expenses accrued if I booked early.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And you know, the degree to which we see the market enter carry, you know, where deferred prices are more expensive than prompt, or an inverse where that situation is vice versa, is at least partially influenced about around cost of money as well. I think you know, Brian touched on that we're pretty uniquely positioned at ADM Fertilizer in terms of our forward price offerings. And I think that's a unique way that you can manage your interest costs. You know, a number of those forward price offerings don't require full prepayment, and so you can lock in deferred prices 6, 7, 8 months down the road without fully paying for that fertilizer. So it's really a, you know, a buy, lock in price now, pay some sort of prepayment, pause it down but not the full balance, and then pick that fertilizer up 6, 7, 8 months down the road, and then make full payment when you pick it up. So typically that cost of carry prices and some of that interest cost, but from our perspective, that is a unique way that you can you know, lock in prices that are attractive while managing cash flow on the front end and interest costs in this high interest environment.
Does that kind of answer your question, Joe?
Yeah, I think it helped. Certainly the commentary overall was helpful this morning.
Good. We appreciate that. We want to bring you good content that's useful.
Can you speak to where you think dry, specifically MAP, DAP, and potash will be this summer for summer fill?
Yeah, I mean, I can touch on dry, MAP, and DAP to a certain degree. Our general expectation is that the risk is to the downside for summer fill pricing. I'm not going to speculate on the exact price level where I think you should step out and buy that product in July, August, September timeframe for either fall or spring application next year. But the things that we're watching that will largely influence that pricing, you know, we see some of the input costs that go into producing ammonized phosphate, such as sulfuric acid and ammonia, have seen some fairly significant price declines over the last several months that should contribute to some decreased cost of production curves in the deferred. But, you know, supply has been challenging in the phosphate market coming to the U.S. for a while. And so I think it largely depends as well upon buying habits of other destination markets, like India and Brazil, once we get through our spring season and into the summer months and fall, as well as Chinese exports, both in terms of the time frame in which the Chinese begin to export phosphates in a more serious way, as well as the volumes. Typically, the volumes in which the amount of phosphates they export are allocated under a license program, where the government approves the amount of volume. Those volumes will largely determine sort of the S&D bounds globally on DAP and MAP as we go into the summer fill months and determine pricing. So my long-winded answer basically is the risk is to the downside, but it's too early to call exact levels. Certainly would tend to agree with Chris's prior comments on this, that of all these fertilizer products, phosphates are probably those that prone to severe downside corrections due to some trade flow issues and production issues.
Yeah, and just to put a number to it for the caller, forecast at the beginning of March, the February kind of average price for DAP by dollar was $5.90. In our March forecast, we had that going down over $100 over the next 6 months to $4.80 by August. But we are very nervous about that forecast due to some of those kind of trade flow issues. So generally where we see the market washing out is, like I said, in my kind of overview, a correction in those phosphate prices, but we have a greater degree of uncertainty over that forecast at the moment based on some of these kind of duty issues.
Perfect. Thanks for those answers. What else is out there?
All right. This is Fred from Nebraska. We've been talking about the input prices of fertilizer a lot on these questions, but I got a question around the grain market. You talked about the 465 and 490 on the corn, 1185 and 1220 to 1240 on the soybean. But the question is 25 and 26. And it was already forementioned on this call that there'll be a reset probably by fall pricing on fertilizer.
you know, what are your recommendations on 25 and 26? Because one thing I don't want to just focus on is what maybe some producers did in 14 and 15, and lose some of these prices right now. Because if you take a look at 2012, we had our lowest production in the United States ever, but yet everyone said there was going to be a short crop in 2023, and it looks like it's going to come in around 177, 178, somewhere in that ballpark, which is right at or right below the mean. So is there a risk in the market to lose this forward in front of these prices in 25 and 26 and we get down to that $4 mark? So what would be your recommendations percentage-wise if we're looking to do that? Knowing our input are tough to call right now, but I don't know, I'm just kind of concerned on that forward marketing if a guy should be taking advantage of this market.
Yep, I would say we are seeing interest perk up for 25 and 26. There's a lot of time out there. If we continue to enter in or progress market that are growing global carryouts and stocks to use, it's going to be more of a front-end loaded phenomenon where we'll continue to widen spreads like we've seen for 24 option months for corn and beans. So now if I look at a DEIS 24 and DEIS 25, there's a little bit of carry, but not a lot of carry, right? We're about a 13-cent carry, DEIS 24 and DEIS 25. So if we do see a reset lower on prices with normal production, it's going to be more of a 24, early 25 option month phenomenon where you'll see those calendar spreads widen. Now, with that being said, I think if we can get this next kick higher, and we take these 25 and we start knocking on the doorstep of $5. And we look at NOV 25 beans at $12. You know, I don't know that you need to do more than 5 to 10%, but I think to start dipping your toe in there, I think makes a lot of sense. There's just so much time. If we've proven anything, that uncertainty gives us opportunities. And even if we do have a pretty decent sell-off, those new crop option months for 25 will be insulated because it's going to be and become more of a spread story with spreads widening, responding to the global supply increases.
Right, and I guess my concern is, you know, we had some of those same philosophies in 14, 15, and working capital took a hit in a lot of areas, and just trying to prevent some of that. So I hope you understand why I asked the question.
Yep, absolutely. And again, it's on a lot of people's minds here. You know, what should we be doing out that far forward?
Good question. 507, you were starting to talk there. What questions do you have?
Yes, with the negative public perceptions of fertilizers in general, and maybe even farming, are you guys doing anything to be proactive, or who should be doing that, and how serious is it in your estimation of, they're already talking about limiting fertilizer and banning it in certain countries of the world already.
Yeah, thanks for the question. I'll give you some color from ADM's perspective. Our belief is food is fundamental. You know, we're gonna grow the population by some reports as much as a third by 2050. Yet we're gonna be losing arable land over that same timeline. And so to be blunt, We need to be more efficient. We need to continue to grow more food to service the food requirements of the growing population. And that can't be done without synthetic fertilizers. ADM obviously believes we're uniquely positioned in the fight against food insecurity. And so with that, you know, we've got our people in Washington, on the Hill, lobbying to ensure that we're doing everything we can to ensure we provide or play our part in providing adequate food supply. No doubt regulations and government regimes will set the guardrails and parameters in which we have to operate in. But make no mistake, ADM's position is to continue to find ways to continue to support food production as it relates to meeting the food requirements of the growing global population. But great question. Chris,
go ahead. To add some color on that from what we see, totally a negative perception. I think that with fertilizer and agriculture commodities kind of firmly in the limelight in 2022, there was a bit more of a wider appreciation of the importance of the market
which has probably helped things somewhat. And if you look at regions of the world, such as the European Union, where they have some very ambitious targets in place for reducing chemical fertilizer consumption, ultimately we think they're probably going to start to wind back on some of those, and the ambition will be a long, long, long way from reality. And you're already kind of, although we see a long, for a long time seeing kind of different protests from farmers, and that they are certainly ramping up within Europe at the moment, and the European Commission is starting to backpedal from some of those restrictive policies as a result of that. So likely to see a bit more of that in the future as well. But that, you know, we have seen quite a lot of advancements in the industry, in the kind of efficiency of use in the more developed agricultural regions of the world. If you look at, you know, the amount of nitrogen, phosphate and potash being applied in a country like the US, it is essentially a flat line for the past 20 to 30 years, whilst yields have increased, what, two or threefold, probably even more than that. So there is a good story to be told on the kind of improved efficiencies of use, and there are still lots of kind of technological room to improve on that front as well. And yeah, we are starting to see a bit of a diversification of some of the portfolios out there, and what different distributors and retailers are offering for nutrition solutions. We'll probably see some more of the biological products proliferate a little bit more in the market. Yeah, they are kind of gaining a little bit of traction, and the kind of ease of use of those products and the kind of cost of those products is what really needs to improve. But we are seeing some signs of that. So I think generally we're not kind of too down on the perception of the market, and we think that there are enough kind of changes that are happening, enough evolution of the kind of product mix that will ultimately help to tell a good story.
Hey, Jess, can I add something here quick too?
Yep, for sure. Go ahead.
I feel like this is starting to really come into focus with the demand coming on by the CPGs or the consumer packaged goods from their need to reduce scope 3 emissions. You know, and this is not a plug for ADM regenerations, but as we see this increase in whether it's cover crops or emission scorings, like we're in the early innings of what that means for growers such as all of you on this call. To me, it's showcasing like what you are already doing, what you have been doing to be sustainable, and how you grow your crop, because so much of it you're already doing. So it's just showcasing that, and luckily, I don't know, luckily or fortunately, like the need for the end user, the consumer, from the CPGs to demonstrate this certainly starts with you all at the field level, but certainly, you know, what we have found in our finding that you all are doing a lot of this already, you know, to Chris's point on fertilizer use flatlining versus, you know, rampant increases in production, clearly we're doing something right. So it's showcasing that narrative for what it actually is reality. But I do believe that it is starting to play out through these regenerative ag programs.
That's exactly where I was going to go with that, Daniel. I think you said it really well. I think we're doing a lot of really great things to help the farmer with some of the different programs that we offer and some of the things that we're supportive of. So I feel confident in the direction that we're headed to make sure that we're taking care of the farmer that we work with and that we value the partnership with. Really great question, for sure.
Well, this is Greg. It's a follow-up to my question, as I think that what you're doing is good. I'm just suggesting or outlining that the public doesn't even know their food comes from farms anymore, that there's a disconnect in connection of what we're doing and what they receive and how they receive it. And so there's some education or something that needs to be done for the public to even understand what it is that we're doing, good or right, or improvements that are being made.
I think you bring up a great point. And I think that's why the regenerations program that Daniel alluded to is something that he highlighted, purely because we've got a lot of, you know, you think about an ADM, we've got a corn processing plant in Minnesota, we've got corn processing plants across the country, soybean processing plants across the country. And essentially our customer is that downstream user who is directly in front of the consumer. And so I think what Daniel was trying to drive home is that their customers are asking for, you know, what are you doing? How are you sourcing things sustainably? And that's how we're trying to bridge the gap. We've got a campaign that we've put together, the Faces of Food campaign. And so it's really trying to tie the, you know, the farmer and what you guys do every day to why it's impactful and where their food comes from. And so we can definitely share some of those videos with you guys. And if we're missing the mark on that, we definitely want feedback. But we feel like we're trying to help communicate that message, because at the end of the day, you are the kind of the life force behind this whole market industry that we have running, and you're the baseline for what we do. So hopefully we can continue to communicate that message. Greg, I definitely appreciate the question. I think that there was another 507 number that maybe came off mute as well that tried to speak as well.
Yeah, I did. Jerry Hansen from Southern Minnesota. I just had a question on using TSP in the fall instead of Manford. Is there a price ratio that we should be looking for? Or,
I mean, I won't speak to it agronomically. We can take down your number and we can have somebody more knowledgeable agronomically reach out than I. And I won't even speak for the fall from a price perspective, just given that what I've previously laid out in as far as significant variation in price expectations from now through to the fall. I think it's too early to call that. But I will say for this spring, we've seen TSP be a really attractive product from a price spread perspective to both DAP and MAP. And if that's something you have interest in using on your farm and you feel comfortably agronomically, I would definitely recommend reaching out to your ADM sales rep as pricing on TSP is quite advantageous when you tease out the cost per pound of P2O5 equivalents. So I know that doesn't fully answer your question, but I would say that you're certainly on the right track thinking to optimize or to minimize P2O5 costs going to an alternative product like TSP, and that's definitely something you should look at for the spring. And we'll bring more on that as we get closer to fall in terms of our opinion on those price spreads relative to DAP and MAP and relative to nitrogen as well.
And just to add to that from an investor perspective, we do expect to see significantly more TSP supply coming into the market. OCP, the Moroccan producers, the going very much gung-ho on a strategy of producing more and more TSP and pushing that out to the market. That is one of the products they are selling into the US at the moment, despite those duty rates. They're very big on that strategy. So I would expect that TSP will maintain a relatively advantageous price from a buying perspective over the longer run. So I think it's a good strategy to be considering.
Yeah, one more comment on there too to be mindful of then just shifts to the availability of it. As Chris alluded to, as we see more supply come into the marketplace, especially I believe you said you were in Minnesota, just make sure you're checking with the terminals, your suppliers to understand, hey, is that a product they're going to house? And if they plan to house it to, you know, if you're going to end up carrying some of it, if you've got on-farm storage, if you're carrying that through the spring, just make sure it just isn't housed as readily as, say, your traditional DAP or MAP. So just be mindful of that when you're looking to incorporate it in, but you're 100% right in looking at it as an option, understanding the P2O5 spread analysis, basis data against the nitrogen input side as well. So great question. Thank you for it.
Yeah. I'm up in central North Dakota, and it's getting to be, you hear rumors of getting paid extra for this regenerative crop. Are you guys in that market right now?
Daniel, do you want to speak to that? If you can't, I definitely can jump in as well.
I'll let you take a address. I can add in, but I'll let you handle that one.
Okay. So yes, we are definitely in that market, and depending on how you're set up, we can pay you for whatever practices you're doing, as long as it aligns with our program. We can connect you with some of our reps in North Dakota. I've got your number jotted down, so we'll make sure we connect you there. But if you're within a facility that, or within a region to a facility that is procuring grain, there are a lot of other programs that you can take advantage of. If you're close to a facility that's, you know, producing ethanol, producing soybean meal or oil, there's a variety of other programs. And then we've even got some fertilizer programs within that region bucket as well that you can take advantage of if you're using a BioWish type of product, which we've sent a couple text messages out about. Long-winded answer is yes, we are participating in that market. And I believe that our program is probably one of the top in the industry just because it's not a long-term commitment. It's a year-to-year type of thing. And it's a very efficient program that we've created and curated.
Okay. Also, is there a liability where these guys are getting paid for their carbon credit? One else advised it. There is one. There's a rumor there was one paying the, like an oil company, they were paying twice the amount for the carbon credit. But who actually owns the carbon credit, and are you liable if them carbon the carbon level depletes, you know, in your soil?
That is probably a little out of our wheelhouse, but I want to get you the right answer. So I've got your number jotted down, and we'll get you some more feedback on that and can follow up as well. And it looks like maybe Brian has a little bit of insight on that. So Brian, if you want to weigh in, that would be great.
Yeah, you know, the carbon space is becoming probably one of the biggest hot button topics in the industry, and something that very much is top of mind for ADM. You know, a lot of that's driven, as someone mentioned earlier, from the CPG and the economic, social, political pressure that basically reverse engineers that all the way down to the farm gate. But it is a pretty complex matter, and I would encourage you, like Jess aforementioned, happy to discuss it. It's a fairly lengthy conversation because there's a lot of tangential points to it. So what I would suggest is give us a buzz after the call, or talk with your ADM rep, because again, this is something that I'm pleased to see farmers asking this question more and more, because if you follow the dollars and where the investment's being made, this is not something that's going away anytime soon. And I think one of the limiting factors in this space that we are challenged by is the lack of clarity, the lack of awareness and education. I think ADM's made a lot of investment to clean some of that up, but we need help from the industry. We need help from our peers. One of the things that we did, as again was aforementioned, is we simplified the process through our Regents program, where instead of having a third party make a payment, some of these programs that enable the farmers to participate in some of this carbon capture credit, whatever bucket you want to pay it in, is via the direct payment through the Regen program. So again, there's a lot of tangential points to it that I think are really good questions to ask that we probably need to spend some time with you offline. And that may be one of our topics for future phone calls, is really focusing on this bucket, because we're getting this question asked quite a bit more. So appreciate you raising it.
It's just very concerning with the people that when you read online who's actually involved in this, and the liability of somebody selling their carbon credits and that carbon credit getting resold to the huge conglomerate that now who's got control, and can they come back after you if them carbon levels, you know, deplete?
Yeah, it's a valid point, and again, probably one I would probably bring in our carbon expert to discuss. And I think that's something internally we'll have some conversation around of making that a central topic for a future call. So appreciate the question. Let's connect offline and maybe walk through some of those concerns that you have.
Okay. Yeah. The other thing, I know there's one, a market out here that they were paying an extra dollar bushel for certain crops. One was barley, one was field peas, for that was raised on this regenerative farming.
Yeah, yep, and it very well possibly could have been a roll through the ADM program, as Daniel and Jess alluded to. You know, ADM rolled out a pilot program here a year or two ago. They've expanded on that. It will continue to expand through 2025 to some 5 million acres globally. With the intention of incentivizing farmers for an a la carte model of behavior changes that rewards them for taking or adjusting some of their farming practices and simplifying the process where ADM is directly making that payment as opposed to having to go through a government program or a third-party program where you just get bogged down with paperwork and timelines, et cetera.
Okay, yeah, I can contact back or somebody can give me a call at some other time.
Yeah, we'll take down your number. Really appreciate the call and the question.
Yeah, we'll make sure that we get that question answered because we've got folks who cover, you know, the Dakotas for our region program specifically, and they're going to have a lot of really good insight that they can give to you. With that, we are almost an hour and a half over, so I appreciate everybody's time and everybody's question. If you have questions down the road, definitely reach out to your ADM reps. But I'm going to go ahead and just put a wrap on this because I know that everybody's got other places that they need to be today. And so for now, that is a wrap for our March 2024 call. If you'd like to learn more about ADM Fertilizer, go to fertilizer.admadvantage.com or visit with a rep in your area. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon. We will send out an email as well with the date for the next grower call. Depending on weather, grain, and fertilizer markets, we want the information that we share to be relevant. Thank you guys so much and have a great day.